Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, the 28th of October. You're listening to Viewpoint Talk Radio. It's current affairs programme with invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day with you for the next 2 hours. If you've got something you want to get off your chest, it can be local, it can be national, it can be international. Well, here at Viewpoint, we give you that opportunity, and these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Ah, but first of all, let's have a look at the this morning's headlines.
Great savings on all Nessun products at Mi Colchón. Up to 24 months interest-free. No hidden fees. Proud sponsors of the international news headlines on TRE. Mi Colchón, for a great night's sleep.
So, looking at your front pages this morning, Financial Times says speculation is growing that Chancellor Rachel Reeves will announce an income tax increase in the budget, probably because she is likely to be hit by a bigger-than-expected downgrade to an official productivity forecast. The paper says there's also a silver lining for Reeves, as an economic growth has been better than forecast. Rumours about another possible announcement in the budget, a mansion tax on homes worth and more than $2 million. That's probably a semi-detached house in London, is the main story for the Daily Mail. It's been told by the head of an estate agency. The possibility of a new tax is hanging like a sword of Damocles over the housing market. The Daily Mirror highlights a report by the Fairness Foundation calling on the Chancellor to increase taxes for the wealthy. The charity says the gap between the richest and poorest in Britain has widened dramatically. The richest 10% of families own just over 50% of total wealth, whilst the poorest 10% of households have a total net worth of just £15,400 or less. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has told The Guardian that humanity has failed to limit global warming to 1.5C above pre-industrial levels and must change course immediately. Speaking ahead of next week's COP30 climate summit in Brazil, he warns leaders the longer they delay cutting carbon emissions, the greater the danger of passing catastrophic tipping points. Under the headline Costmore Cottage, The Sun reports that workmen have been seen at Frogmore Cottage in Windsor preparing it for Prince Andrew, who's under pressure to move out of the nearby Royal Lodge. Paper says he's willing to move to the cottage and building work is underway, even though the Duke and Duchess of Sussex spent £4.2 million renovating just 6 years ago. It has got its own yoga and spa retreat in it, by the way. It's not a cottage. It's not a casita. It's not a casa de campo, by the way, just so you know. He's not, you know, he's not going to be out there. He's not going to be out there tending to his veg in the allotment. Put it that way, you know. Anyway, meanwhile, on the front page of the Daily Telegraph, it highlights the trial of a new system for rapid diagnosis of prostate cancer at Leeds Teaching Hospitals Trust. The paper says the service will use artificial intelligence to interpret scans within seconds, with those at higher risks being sent to a radiologist and having a biopsy on the same day. And the Times finally says that King College London have found appreciating works of art immediately reduces stress levels and can even boost the immune system. The research involved two groups of people, one viewing paintings in a gallery while the other looked at copies on the works of the works in a normal environment. In the first group, the levels of stress hormone, cortisone, fell by 22%, while in the second, they dropped by 8%. So there you go. Depending on what your taste in art is, I mean, if you've got Munch's The Scream, followed by Guernica, followed by the black paintings of Goya, I'm not sure how that would do. It would keep your stress levels down. And as for Jackson Pollock, I mean, lots of them get talking about Pollocks. I'm joined by Andres Gallardo, okay, a well-known art critic and lover coach. Good morning to you, Andres.
Good morning, Giles. Good morning.
It's going to be one of those mornings. It's one of those mornings.
It's one of those mornings.
Where the news itself is kind of... It's not flatlining. There hasn't been any sort of major development. So we'll probably just have a couple of rants at each other during the next 2 hours.
The first thing I would like to do today is gloat a little bit.
Because you guys gloat a little bit?
Yes.
Can you do this small gloating?
This weekend I looked at the Premiership.
Did you now?
Table. And
we're going to sports, are we?
Yes,
go on.
in second place,
yes,
Bournemouth Football Club, the Cherries. Yes. So that's something that we're not going to see very often, and we should all cherish and enjoy.
Why?
What a fun, why? Because yeah. I support Bournemouth.
Okay, so we shouldn't all support them. Because
we should.
I had a nightmare weekend. Delighted.
Yeah, it is a small club that is there, second in the Premiership, the most important league in the world, and we are there, number two in the league. That's amazing. We're not going to see that very often, and you know, we should enjoy it and be delighted with it.
When one supports. You know, what she was formerly a village team between the Palace, the Strand, and also the Palace of Hampton Court, obviously, which was small, and they actually had a place called the Pheasantry where there were pheasants, otherwise known as Chelsea, which was a small village. So that's also a small football team that I support.
Yeah, and, well, you know. I remember the days in League Two. I used to go to see them before they even turned the pitch round. Do you know now it's east to west, it used to be north to south.
Why did I ever think of you as a sports statistician?
I'm not a great sport, but I used to love going on a Saturday to a football match there. Great atmosphere, well, great thing. You know, I'm not a great football follower,
here we go, because the Daily Star's got on their front page, here we don't go, Christmas footy Grinch shocker, there's only going to be one Premiership game on the 26th of December.
That's shocking.
On Boxing Day.
That is shocking.
Because that's tradition. That is tradition.
That is tradition. It's broken. That's terrible. You know, how are you going to get away from the family and the turkey sandwiches? It's going to be very, very difficult.
Because you remember I used to do a Boxing Day bash up at the casita when I had the place on the lake. I used to do a Boxing Day bash because when I was a kid, we used to go to a Boxing Day bash. And it was my friend, my family, my, you know, my parents' friends had a big house and everybody went and it was great boxing. I look forward to it more than Christmas Day, right? And of course, 26th of December here, it's a nothing day, isn't it? There's no particular because you've got Noche Buena and that's the big one, and then you have Christmas Day and that's... Here we go. I'm waiting for the third, because that's health.
They come in threes.
Like buses. Anyway, so, and I thought I'd do a Boxing Day bash. And my Spanish friends, morning, Patrick, they were like, what are you doing? And I said, oh, there's another holiday, it's a fiesta. And they embraced it. I don't think I've ever had sort of paella and barbecue on Boxing Day, but that's what we used to do, so there you go.
You could introduce that now there's no football. You could introduce anything to entertain people in the UK now.
Well, they can listen to TRE, can't they? I might do my own virtual Boxing Day bash. But by the way, I will be live on Christmas morning. It's because we're less than 2 months to go, Andres.
Yes.
Anyway, let's have a look at the front pages anyway, what they're saying. Times says, small boat migrants to be housed in barracks, drive to end hotels in the year. And a picture of Nicole Kidman, who apparently is wearing a revenge dress. I'm not being thing, but she does look a bit Bride of Frankenstein-y on that one today. she's had a bit of work done, sorry. Meanwhile, talking of which, NHS printed me a new face. As the Metro, this is about not. It's not a Nicole Kidman story, by the way. It's talking about 75-year-old Dave Richards and his new lifelike resin face, produced on a 3D printer. Believe it or not. Meanwhile, Telegraph, NHS to offer same-day prostate cancer test, and a picture of the King, who looks like he's smoting his forehead yesterday the King was heckled by Prince Andrew, about Prince Andrew, excuse me. Meanwhile, the Eye, bigger tax hikes and spending cuts on way in crunch budget, Reef signals. So I'm just thinking about being heckled by Prince Andrew. Financial Times, Reeves budget sums face £20 billion below from CETA productivity downgrade. The same picture of a frankly... scary Nicole Kidman on the front of the Mail. Threat of mansion tax sparks house market havoc. Fergie has nowhere to go and no one to go with. The Independent. Trump warns Putin, we have a nuclear sub off your shore. In the muscle test. The Mirror. £10 million slap in the face after it's revealed firm links to husband bought luxury Florida flat. This is... Baroness Moni, who just keeps giving this is the gift that keeps on giving after her scandalous PPE gains. Meanwhile, the Daily Express, grooming gang probed rig from the start as Reform demands MPs take over rape scandal injury. And again, that picture of Nicole Kidman on this morning. The Sun, Prince 2 Powers exclusive, Cost More Cottage, and finally, that's it. Right then, looking at, Richard, good morning to you, Richard. Is my pronunciation of Money not good enough? Is it Money, or is it Money, or how do you pronounce it? The Baroness who took a load of money anyway. Should take Randy Andy to Clacton. I know an empty house in the area. Nigel Farage's. People will be buying stuff they don't need with money they don't have instead, and there's plenty of Boxing Day football. Not all football is English Premier League based. Thank you very much. Indeed. If you want to get involved with this morning's shows, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Thank you very much, Moan. Moan, thank you. It's not Moni. Moan. Okay, thank you very much. Your Spanish press, looking at those as well. Hunter breaks with Sanchez. He doesn't have the capability to govern. That's what that's on the front of of El País. On the front of Abathe, they're talking about Vox making gains. Also looking at La Vanguardia, also has La Vanguardia and El Mundo also have these stories on Hunt. Am I pronouncing it correctly? Junts, right. Andres, tell me more.
Do you want to know about that?
Just quickly, because obviously we try and...
When the general election, the final results of the general election, Sanchez was short of 7 votes.
Yeah.
He only could get 7 votes to be appointed prime minister, and he had to go to the Catalan separatist party of Junts to get those 7 votes to be able to be appointed prime minister. They did a deal. They said it would help, that Junts would help the Socialist Party throughout the life of parliament to, you know, sort of be able to stay in power. Of course, like all politicians, in exchange for a number of things. The biggest one was the amnesty to all politicians who were involved in the secession attempt in 2017.
It's the illegal referendum.
The amnesty, the famous amnesty.
I'm getting my things.
Yeah. So this amnesty was passed by Parliament, and they seemed to more or less get through part of the legislation, not a lot, but some of it, so he could maintain himself in power. Now, then they got to the point where Puigdemont, who's still in Brussels, had to be returned to Spain. He wanted to return to Spain, sorry. But the court said, hold on a second, yeah, you could be an amnesty for the political things, but there was also the misuse of public funds, and that's not included in the amnesty. So you, if you come to Spain, you'll be arrested and be tried for that particular crime. So he then stayed in Brussels and went back to the government saying, you have to sort these out. Well, the government kind of sort that out. You know, the judges apply the law of the land.
Yeah.
And of course, when they attempted to change the misuse of public funds legislation, the European Union says, hold on a second, this, you know, we have something to say, because some of your public funds come from the European Union, so you cannot just blanket pardon everyone that takes, you know, the money. Anyway, all very complicated. It got to the point where they started trying to negotiate other issues, like giving more powers to the Catalan government, the regional government, and that is a constant asking for things.
Yeah.
When now they got to the point where they... things that they cannot deliver because the government are not empowered to deliver certain things. So now Junts have decided that because of that, they cannot deliver all the things that they promised they would. They break all relations with the Socialist Party, which means, in real terms, that they won't be able to pass any legislation without those 7 votes from this regional party. So... we were paralysed before. We are now completely paralysed.
From the nose down, basically.
So,
yeah.
Now, the question now is that Sanchez is just completely, you know, cornered there. what is he's going to, his next move? Is he going to stay in power to 2027?
Naturally.
No,
why wouldn't?
But in the meantime, the country is still at legislator. It's a complete. Sorry, I got a tongue trip there. It's completely paralysed, and let's not forget that this parliament, during this parliament, we haven't had a budget. Yeah. I mentioned this before in previous programmes.
It's very important. We mention this again and again and again because people make
because,
not be aware.
Yeah, but, you know, without a budget, how can you govern? You know, you cannot keep using the old budgets because things change on a year-to-year basis. That's why it's an obligation of the governments to present a budget every year, and that's in the Constitution. So you cannot say, oh, well, we cannot agree a budget, let's, you know, use the last year. So last year's is the year before and the year before. That budget is not, you know... I mean, there's important things that they need to budget for. One of them, just to give you an example, there's many, many others, but one of them is defence. So we are now paralysed in that. So the options that Sanchez got is just stay in power for as long as he can until 2027, or call for a snap election now and see what happens. But he knows that what's going to happen is there's going to be a shift to the right, and possibly what the polls say is that we would have a conservative government backed up by... Vox, which are more radical.
I warned you about using that word in this studio, didn't I?
Sorry?
I warned you about using that word in this studio.
No, but the thing is, here's the thing. He says that he's preventing the population of Spain from having to suffer a government of the right. Well, if people vote that, that's what it is, and that's what the democratic game is all about, you know. So people go and vote, and then they form government with what people want, people want to be in there, you know. And so it's almost becoming an autocrat.
But you see, if he's not going to want to call an election. If he's got a mandate till 2027, then what's the point of calling a snap election when he could lose? When he could say, we're only coming to the end, so you've got... He's got 2 years, basically, 18 months. And so things could turn around. Vox could, you know, this is why the Labour Party, I don't think, shouldn't be getting too concerned about reform in the UK, because they have reform may have the capacity of, shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, but that's a different situation you've got in the UK, because the Labour Party have got a massive majority in Parliament. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the election is 4 years away.
Right.
Nearly 4 years away. So there is time for the Labour Party to be able to turn things around. Problem is that they haven't got a plan and they don't know where they're going, but that's a different matter. But here it's a different thing because he hasn't got a majority and he's unable to govern.
But there are two really delicious things in this bit, because obviously if... Junts want to call a motion of no confidence in Sanchez, they would have to go with the Partido Popular and Vox, neither of whom are big fans of Catalans.
Yeah, you see, there's another problem there. Junts, if they have a motion of no confidence, they would rely on the votes of PP and Vox.
That's not gonna happen.
And they don't want to be associated with them,
exactly.
Because they, you know, the Catalan public, the votes
for Puigdemont,
they would say, how can you make friends with these people? You know what I mean? So it's a, yeah.
Yeah, but perhaps here's the thing. On an existential level, Andres, okay? The thing that made Spain democratic, okay, after 75 and after, you know, the first tentative steps towards democracy after years of Franco, and I dropped the F-bomb, is the fact that the autonomous regions who had suffered, you know, the suppression of language, torture, in some cases executions, blah, 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 they all were allowed to set their own, you know, the hunters, various regions, Hunter Andalusia, because that's where we are at the moment, Catalonia has given greater autonomy. And that perhaps has allowed the fracturing of parties in a way that you don't get so much in, say, the UK or in France, because you have, in the UK, okay, you've got, you know, Clyde Primrose, the Welsh.
Cymru.
Thank you. You've got played Cymru, thank you. You've got Scottish National Party, et cetera, et cetera. But they're not in the way that you have. They're not as perhaps as militant, and they're not so much disrupting agents as a bildu. And good morning to Claudio, because I know that's his favourite word in the universe. As a bildu, as a hunts, etc.
Yeah, but you've got. I mean, again, there's differences. It's similar, but there's differences. Both the Catalans and the Basques, there is a part of the population there that they want independence from Spain. So they're not. I mean, the idea of a big country like Spain to give regional power to be able to take the government of the regions to closer to the people. In theory, is a good idea. So you take the government closer to where things are happening, rather to be everything centralized in Madrid. Now, that is supposed to help regional development. What is in fact, what is created is another layer of administration. So you not only have central government, but then you have the regional governments, and then you have the local governments and the provincial governments. So you've got layer after layer after layer of administration. And instead of making it easier for the developing the local policies, it's made it a little bit more difficult with all these layers of administration. So that is something that both the Catalans and the Basques are saying, well, if we are going to have a spanner in the works, if you like, let's just be independent. And then we can manage our own affairs. But that has all sorts of consequences that they haven't stopped to think about, because there are many, many things that once you are an independent country, you have to, sort of take care of. I'm talking about defense. I'm talking about pension things. I'm talking about infrastructures. I'm talking about membership of different bodies like the European Union, NATO, blah, blah, blah. So it's not as easy as to say, yeah, we want to be independent. Everything will be much better. It's not as simple as that. We tend to have this simplistic idea of politics where you say, we stop immigration and everything will be better. Or we become independent and everything will be better. It just doesn't work like that. There's a lot of complexity in it. And there is a lot of planning that needs to be done. And there has to be a vision and a plan to be able to implement it and move forward. And I'm going to say something that a lot of your listeners will probably disagree.
Okay.
But last time I saw a radical plan to be implemented was in the UK under Margaret Thatcher. There is a bomb there. Yeah.
And what was that then? What was that radical plan then that you saw?
Well, I mean, the country went from almost being a province of the USSR. It was a ridiculous amount of the state control the whole of the country, the whole of the economy, to just, sort of become a free market, liberal a country where people could flourish and many things changed then. So it was clear from seeing the country over a period of 10 years, how everything had changed, and you saw more wealth and you saw more development and you saw more, and that was a plan that at the very beginning, she had everyone against, but she managed to get it through because she was there for 10, 12 years.
Yeah.
And you saw the development. So that kind of planning, that kind of vision is that we lack now, when you see, I mean, put the Labour Party now in government. They've had years to be prepared for government. They knew from, when was that Prime Minister that went, Liz Truss. From the minute Liz Truss appeared there and there was a total disaster, that you knew Labour was going to come in. They had time to prepare to go into government and to just develop a plan to improve things in every aspect. When they arrived, they were obviously for the first 6 months and even longer, you could tell they were bumbling from one problem to another. And it was clear that they had no plan to be able to improve and change the country for the better.
9527 8400 is the phone number. Get a quick break because we've got through this first half hour and then back with more viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always lively, joined in the studios by Andres Gallardo. We're going through some of the major topics in Spain this week. If you've got something you want to get involved in, it can be national, international, or just local. Maybe you've got something against electric scooters or something, for example. These are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And it's to the lines we go. Morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles.
Good morning.
Morning, Alf. Did you expect anything else?
When the light went on in the studio, I said, oh, that's Alf.
Yeah, by the way, Andres is drinking from a Labour Party mug this morning, mate.
So. I know, he always has to. It's the only way he can top himself up into normality.
I didn't get that far. This is TRE. But anyway, how are you this morning, my friend?
I'm fine.
Good.
Weather's not so good, but well, hey.
There you go.
I didn't come to Spain for the ride.
Oh, it's not the Brexit you voted for. Right then, come on.
No, absolutely.
What's your viewpoint? What's on your mind, Alf?
So, first of all, this is the normal thing. Andreas, I don't agree. I didn't agree with what Sanchez did with doing his deal with the separatists or any of what went on with that. But it comes down to that simple, basic rule in politics: I'm in power. Now, you keep saying, oh, because we haven't got a budget, you can't do this, that, and the other, and the country can't move forward. But he's in power, and I think for the first time, Giles mentioned it, he's saying, Sanchez is saying, it's because I'm stopping a right-wing group of people from coming in and ruining the lives of Spanish people. Now, you may not agree with that, and you may believe that it should be going to a vote of the public, but that's the position. He was elected. It was awful the way everything happened, but he's there and he's in power, and you can do nothing about it until they say, you know, until whatever happens, whether it's an election, whether he's deposed. But even if the separatists say, well, we're not going along with this, the last thing they're going to do is bring down Sanchez, because they're still getting their bit of power. They're still getting their things done. They're still, you know, changes are still being made to their benefit. And of course, people, you get nowhere without power. We all know that. So, you know, stop the complaint. And the second thing is, you should, Andreas, you should stop listening to the media for your sound bites, okay? Because the media keeps saying, oh, Labour haven't got a plan. Oh, you know, they haven't got a plan. They've got nowhere to go forward. Oh, Thatcher was the only person who had a plan. Come on, nonsense. Thatcher had a plan until the Tories decided they didn't want her plan, and they put Major in. And then the rest of the country went, we don't want this. Oh, no, they elected him, didn't they? Because they did want his plan. And then when he came along, then we had Blair, and we had a different plan. And Blair's plan, so you're telling me that the Labour Party in power from 97 did nothing. You know, they didn't change the world. They didn't change Britain. And they were in power as well for as long as Thatcher. Remember that. You know, she wasn't there as a singleton. Oh, look at the Iron Lake. No, you know, it's gone on. And then subsequent to that, we end up with this hodgepodge. And remember, the Tories didn't come to power after Labour. It was the concessionary parliament, as I say, between the Lib Dems and the Tories. And the first thing the Tories did to the Lib Dems, I was listening to Fallon last night, and he said, you know, we failed a bit in about the first 4 months in office over student grants. You know, they caved in. That was their single biggest platform in their stuff. So the Labour plan, if you don't understand what it is, it's quite simple. It's called the last manifesto for the last election, and you have sometimes, you know, everybody says, oh, well, they don't follow the manifesto, they never deliver on whatever. Just read occasionally, because it's not a true statement. Yeah, there are bits and bobs of it that get pushed to one side or delayed or whatever, but the plan of the Labour Party was spelt out in the manifesto. Remember, The other thing that happens, because they all go, oh, the British public are against this, that and the other. Labour got elected, or was it 36% of the electorate? 36%, just over a third.
Yeah.
These are the lowest levels ever. So two-thirds of the country, believe it or not, don't agree with Labour anyway.
Or just apathetic.
So, oh, they come along and say, we're going to do this. Pardon?
Well, it's an apathetic thing, isn't it, basically, Alfie? No, they can't be bothered to vote. And also...
No. It's not that they can't be bothered to vote.
Right.
That was their positiveness. They didn't vote because they didn't want to vote. They didn't... Right, when it comes to the 97 general election, I know, because I was in the middle of, you know, I was a Labour Party organiser at the time, I worked in one of the marginal constituencies, and what you saw was huge swathes of Tories moving from the Conservatives to Labour, huge swathes. And on top of that, you had people in a lot of the marginal places, people who were Lib Dems and other parties, moving towards Labour because they didn't want to see the Tories back in power. This time round, what you've seen is people didn't want the Tories. They hated what had gone on. They hated the Johnson bit and Liz Truss and all that. They hated all of that. But what they didn't do is they didn't go and vote Labour. They didn't go and vote for anybody. Oh, the Lib Dems in the Lib Dem, in the Liberal power base as it is now, 50-odd MPs they've got.
Yeah.
Yes, they gained out of it. But to be honest, what happened is, it wasn't people being apathetic because, I can't be bothered to vote. They specifically didn't vote because they didn't want to vote for the Tories and they couldn't find themselves to vote for Labour. Because remember, we suffered the after effects of having Corbyn as the leader. So lots of middle ground people, you know, who aren't really decided on where their politics are until the last minute.
Yeah.
Come along and go, well, we're not voting for Labour because that's all that Corbyn lot, they'll all be back. And we're not going to vote Tory because they've just killed the country. So they didn't vote. So it was a positive move to not vote. So it wasn't an apathy.
Can I ask you a question, Alf?
Sure.
Do they...
Of course you can.
Did you think that Labour... Before the election, well before the election, I'm talking, I said before, from the Liz Truss experience, shall we call it, until the election.
Is that like the Jimi Hendrix experience?
Do you think that Labour wasn't aware that they were going to be the next government? Or was it a surprise?
Yeah.
The day of the election,
it was a total
surprise. Oh, my God, we have won. We didn't know that was going to happen.
They didn't know.
You're asking the question.
I will answer the question. It's quite simple. If you think that...
It is that simple.
Why are they talking now about what's happened? Is it Caerphilly, the latest by-election where, you know, Labour got absolutely hammered in a safe Labour area? And the last time that happened was under the leadership of Starmer, and it was called Hartlepool. So if you think Labour were looking, Hartlepool wasn't 20 years before the election, it was a couple of years. So if you think Labour were getting ready for power, then you are wrong based on that. So when we hit Hartlepool, you know, there's one of the safest Labour seats in the country with a Tory government that's not, you know, particularly, you know, enamoured to the country, and Labour couldn't win it, and not only couldn't we win it, we got absolutely mullered in it, and you go, oh yeah, they were getting ready for coming into power. Of course they weren't. And then what happened, because of Hartlepool, listen at least to the history. Listen, I'll tell you what's good. If you can get on catch up, go listen to Wes Streeting he did both the talk shows on Sunday. Listen to what he's saying about it, because he wrote an article in the Sunday Times about Hartlepool and what it changed in the Labour Party. So the Labour Party then spent two years changing its internal arrangements because they weren't fit for power. So we're looking at, well, we can change the party, we can try and get rid of the Corbyn syndrome that we're carrying around like a bloody suitcase on our back all the time, and we can try and move on. So at the next election, this is what I genuinely believe from the people I talked to at Labour, it was, Well, we hope that we can do some damage and start back on the comeback trail. Start. So what did we get? We got a landslide victory with the smallest, one of the smallest supported from the electorate ever known. So no, they weren't ready for power, Andreas, and they didn't have all these. And remember, by then, having been out of power for 14 years, as much as there are a few experienced long-term MPs and people who were ministers in Blair's government and Brown's government, there weren't that many left. And when you strip out the cabinet and about 20 other MPs, the rest of them are all newcomers. Yes. So they're all learning the process of sitting inside Parliament and participating.
Got a few bits coming in here, Alf.
Sure.
Now, hang on a second. Here we go. This is Labour have done a... You can only prepare so much in opposition. Labour have done a fair amount in these 15 months, but unfortunately for them, they're bad at advertising that fact. Yeah, OK. Yeah. Whoever's their comms director needs a good slap.
Absolutely.
The electric aren't very bright, as they're expecting instant miracles after 14 years of demise. Just wait until Uncle Nige comes to power and these plebs will know what the sharp end side of a kebab knife will feel like. Much of these issues are like that.
Just wait until we find the Tory magic wand.
The vision of Uncle Nige and the sharp side of a kebab knife. Much of these issues could be resolved with mandatory voting. Regardless, one should always vote and vote for the least worst. These believe that there are two parties to vote for. Caerphilly was a prime example of tactical voting. So. You know, I hear what you're saying about we're streeting as well. But I mean, my thing with the current situation with Labour, and as you know, Alf, what did I used to be? Conservative of the small C, etc.
No, you are a conservative of the small C. It means you're a gardener in a conservatory.
All right, okay, fair enough. Anyway, moving swiftly onwards. After the comments that the only female Reform UK MP made over the weekend about she got very, very upset because when she put it on her TV, there weren't enough white people in the adverts.
She only saw black and Asian faces.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Well, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And streeting, I mean, because doing the rounds on Sunday.
Trevor Phillips.
Yeah, Trevor Phillips, exactly. So,
but his impassioned bit was actually on Laura Ginsburg's
But
programme.
The thing is the fact that rather than sort of be standoffish and go, oh, well, we're fighting the boats or whatever, Starmer called it straight out this time around. So maybe somebody's gone, you've got to go more attack dog in your response to these sort of
Absolutely.
Things. That, otherwise, you're going to be seen as weak and woolly. And in a week where we had, one in, one out, one in again, and once again, photographs of small boats, and even though it's less than 4% of the actual illegal immigration coming in, this is something that hopefully that they... That Starmer's team can get a grip on. And finally...
I want to know why the Prime Minister released that prisoner wrongly.
Well, it wasn't him personally.
That's the way the media
He's not the Emperor Commodus, is he? He's not standing whacking Phoenix.
Not. Some poor sod at the bottom of the pile who's not been trained properly, who's been stuck on a bit of paper in front of him that he's signed and released the prisoner wrongly. He just happens to be a high-profile prisoner.
But the ultimate
is 261 other prisoners were released wrongly last year.
That's got nothing to do... I mean, that's been going on for... if you know the prison service, which some of us do... then therefore, that sort of thing unfortunately has happened in the past. Here's a thought that struck me though, Alf. This thing about this reform of this female reform MP who said this thing about not too many black and Asian faces on TV or not enough whites or whatever. And then she comes on 24 hours later being all contrite and saying my words were taken out of context and that's not really what I meant. Do you think this is actually brilliant politicking for reform? Because I'll tell you for why, all right? Okay, so reform aren't really sure because the Reform Party conference, rather than being a unified drive to get into power, it seemed to be it unleashed it unleashed, you know, if you've got a musical review at school and the little kids are supposed to do a number and then all the little kids decide to do their own number at the same time and with their own theories. That was kind of like the Reform UK conference, because everybody's going, oh, well, it's the virus and it's COVID and it's, you know, Prince Charles got cancer because he took the, he had the jab, etc. And it was all the sort of nutty fringe came. And do you think that this sort of, you know, the behaviour of the, of, you know, what's happened with this comment about, you know, white faces or black and Asian faces, well, and they put it out there, yeah, and then yeah, if it gets people go, yeah, that she's right, then it's, that's, yeah, that's policy.
But if it gets anyway,
kickback, but if it gets kickback, like in a big way, like it did, then yeah, Nigel can go, you know, Uncle Nigel, when he stops sharpening his kebab knife, can go, actually, no, that was a little bit out of, she's contrite now. But they're sort of testing their parameters for an assault on the next thing. Andreas, you were looking at...
I'm gladly say that I continue to disagree with you, Alf, there. Okay. I think the sequence of events here is that, in terms of the perception of the public, you've had a disastrous last few years of the Conservative government when the public had the chance to change. They went and gave power to the Labour Party with a great majority in Parliament. They are obviously unprepared, and it's not what the media says or anything. It's just my assessment of when I talk to people and I see people with businesses, people who have to pay taxes, people who have to go shopping, and how that is developing, and no one is getting anything right there. They've got the problem with immigration, the Labour Party haven't able not even to scratch the surface of the problem. And what is happening now is, because of all of that, you've got the rise of Reform. So the rise of Reform is just the British public saying, we had the chance with the Tories, they messed it up. Now we gave the chance to the Labour Party. Let's not forget that Reform only got five seats anyway. So they gave the chance to the Labour Party, and they are messing it up. And now the public are saying, "Well, enough's enough. We're going to go for a more radical change, and we're going to go for the Reform option."
Got another caller on the line.
That is the sequence of events, in my view.
Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? Hello, caller, you're live on TRE. Hello, caller.
No, it's only me, Charles.
Hello, caller. Okay, obviously a pocket call there.
So before we missed a bit, you know, I'll pick up. And this is always what we're up against. The perception of the public is what you said, Andreas. Well, it may be the perception of the public.
I only said that, Alf, because you said, oh, you should stop listening to
the media.
The media.
So who creates the perception of the public?
I have enough capacity to be able to listen to the media and also make my own opinion from what I hear from real people when they're telling me their real problems. So it's not only the media.
There's real problems in the UK. There's always real problems for people to deal with. But we're talking about how you end up being in power and what you are and what you can deliver and whether you've got plans or whatever. And I know I always say, you know, if you're not in power, then you can't make the decisions. And I suppose what rubs against the grain for that, forget they're called Reform, forget they're called UKIP, forget they're called whatever name Farage gave to his right wing. That's the single biggest, that I know of, the single biggest group of people putting pressure onto governments to deliver things for them when they're not in power. It was UKIP and Farage's trail of people that pushed Cameron into having a ballot for leaving the EU. It was Farage who pushed things. So I give him great credit for that, but that's because he played, you know, he was the populist person playing the media to the perception of people. So he's setting the agenda in the minds of people based on where he wants it to be. And unfortunately, you know, Andreas, I know you're intelligent. I know you can think for yourself. But you're one in millions of voters. And it's the millions of voters who make the decision. And I'll still come back to it. Only 36% of the people who voted, not the population, so that's about a third a third of the voters voted Labour, which, if what was the turnout? 70%, I think it was. So that's a third of two-thirds of the country. That's not even a half. You're now electing governments, and Spain are suffering from it as well, but that's a bit, PR affects that a bit, is you're now getting governments right across Europe, by the way. Right, it's not just pertinent to Spain and to the UK. Germany are suffering from it. Hungary are did suffer from it. Belgium, Denmark, Sweden are going through it. They're all suffering from this, ending up with governments or the power of the people who are making the decisions representing less than half the population. And that's, you know, that's when you end up with maybe wrong decisions being made. That, by the way, even though you don't agree with the history books, that's what happened in Spain when the anarchists started, you know, before the Civil War, to say, we're going to get into power, not based on any plan, just we're going to be the populists. They were separatists. They were everything that you don't want them to be. But they created a problem because they end up in Parliament and then don't vote. You end up with anarchy.
I don't know what books of history you have read, Alf. But anyway, we're not going to go back to the Second Republic of Spain, because then we're digging ourselves in a big hole.
Well, the biggest issue is,
I think in terms of Farage, on that
Farage, without having any power, he might only have five MPs, and before that he had none. Yeah. You know, the Tory who changed, the Carswell, the geezer from Clacton who changed from being Tory into reform or whatever they called themselves then, that's the closest. So without any power, without any form of intimidation, now he's in Parliament. What's he doing there? Oh, I'm going to go and see the Speaker and I'm going to demand that we have a debate that's going to change the way we deal with the grooming gangs. You know, if you're only a populist, and you go, so, and I'll tell you what, the woman who said about the adverts and that, we may all go, oh, you know, that's a bit racist, that's a bit close to the... There will be millions of people in Britain who agree with her. And that's the problem, you see. Everybody assumes because, oh, the Labour, they've got this great big lump and they're all socialists and they're all anti-this and anti-that. But they don't represent even half the country. So the other half the country are going, well, actually, she's right. And what Farage is playing to is that half the country. He's not playing to you and me. He's playing to that half the country. He's not playing to you, Giles. And I'll take the mickey out of you being a conservative with a small C. That just means you are middle of the road, semi to the right. But you don't want to see people being hurt. You don't want to see people being put down. You don't want to see people being put upon. You're just being genuine. You just have, you know, when it comes to the nuances of politics, you're just slightly to the right.
Cool. Big deal. Yeah, First Nation to the right. I've got, you know, what's One Nation Toryism. Right then, I'm going to run out of time, Alf, so thank you for
your call. Yes, no, nice talking to you, Andreas.
Same stuff.
952 78 4000 is the phone number, studio@tre.radio is the email. Back after this.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Thank you. Thank you for the calls in. If you want to get involved with this morning's Viewpoint, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Looking at some other bits and pieces coming in this morning. The Richard has sent me. Paul says, morning to you, Paul. Says, Farage is using Sarah Poshkin as the racist canary in the coal mine. He's letting her use terminology that he wouldn't use himself. He's also using grooming gang survivor Ellie Reynolds in a similar fashion, who coincidentally was attending and doing talks to reform UK groups leaving the country, and also sent me a typical TV family representation in the 1970s. It's the Smash Robots. If you remember, if you're a child of the 70s, you remember the Smash Robots. I don't see any white faces there because they're all green. But anyway, moving swiftly onwards. Simple, let's have a look. No one ever learns. Richard, no one ever learns anything from history. Maybe not, but I do like researching it. The same media that gives credence to two-bit party MPs with five, two-bit party with five MPs. Let's have a look at, the media. Do you mean the right-wing media, Andreas? You haven't given a chance to Labour. 15-odd months does not define a chance. Idiotic to believe otherwise. Right, those bongos mean that we're coming to the first end of the first half of this morning's Viewpoint. Be back in the second half, and we'll be looking at a variety of other subjects, including one year on from Badana. Back after the national and international news.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Always live, always lively. Viewpoint with you for the next 56 or so minutes. Whatever you want to talk about, it could be a local issue, it could be a national issue, it could be an international issue. These are numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
If you're wondering what's happening in later on today on TRE, well, following me, as always, will be Stephen Ritson with Europe Today on this Tuesday the 28th. Following Stephen, Selena is away today. She will be back tomorrow. So we are doing a best of animal talk on the lifestyle show as well. Hannah Murray, live and direct from the studio as always. She will be live from 4 o'clock. Her guests include Mary Ellen Moriarty. She was the runner-up in BBC's Celebrity Race Across the World. She's an advocate for young people and community well-being. Sam Ritchie, Within These Walls. She's from the south of England and spent more than a decade as an estate agent in the UK. She's always fascinated by buildings and the stories they have to tell. And at completely different, at 25 minutes to the top of the hour, 25 to 6. Should be to Emily Murray joins Hannah. She is talking all about a new book that she has written about Ariana Grande and how she's ruled the global stage for over a decade. I'm sure that all the Swifties out there will be upset, and never mind the Queen Bee fans. That's Beyonce, just in case you didn't know. So those are before Howard Brereton. I'm not sure if he's a Beyonce or a Ariana Grande or indeed a Swiftie. He joins us with Spain today before there's a repeat of this show between 7 and 9. That's all coming up on TRE Talk Radio, your voice in Spain. Don't forget, Dave is away for the rest of the week, so I'll be standing in for him manly with Daybreak tomorrow morning from 8 until 10, and then donning my other hat, of which I have several, to do Let's Talk. That's all coming up in TRE. I'll be speaking as well to Iberian Tax, sponsors of this show, tomorrow morning at round about quarter past nine. That's all coming up on TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.
Talk Radio Europe.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Now, this week has marked the first anniversary of the terrible floods, the Dana floods that hit Valencia and the region 12 months ago, causing over 200 deaths and a general outpouring on the plus side of support from all over Spain and internationally. We all know people who drove from all areas to help those who were affected by those quite devastating floods and trying to rebuild those lives. And one of the things that struck me as I heard Bob reporting on it yesterday in the Spanish and local news yesterday was the fact that the people who were in charge of the Valencia community at the time, none of them have stepped down. None of them have what we would call doing the decent thing and walked away from it. And it just makes and 12 months on, Andres, are we any closer to finding out what happened? Who bears responsibility? I mean, I'm not saying, oh well, yeah, there are acts of quote unquote God, and you know there will always be storms, and you know Jamaica's currently experiencing a quote-unquote killer storm, but the general sort of stonewalling and the refusal to have responsibility when it became pretty obvious pretty quickly that there were measures that could have been taken by those high up in the Valencian government, the autonomous region, that would have saved lives.
Yes. One of the things that apparently, I haven't been there, but one of the things that apparently you cannot see from the TV images we saw, they were terrible anyway, is if you go and see the enormity of what the catastrophe that happened there, it's incredible, apparently. The people who've been there, they just come back completely shocked of the enormity of the disaster. The disaster... Yes, it was a natural disaster, and of course there are things that may have, you know, been bad in any case, but the lack of the lack of decisiveness in some of the decisions that had to be taken at a difficult time like that one weren't there. So the population weren't advised of what was coming. There was a lack of resources after the event. There was a lack of coordination between all the bodies One of the things that saved a lot of people was the fact that the first ones that went to the rescue was neighbours and the people from other towns that they just flooded in to help with very few means to be able to do it, you know, just like a broom and a few bin bags and everything, just to help people. The political aftermath is even worse because the people responsible after seeing the enormity of what happened and the clumsiness of their actions should have at that point said, look, we've messed up. It's time, you know, for us to go and just let someone else step in and try to manage rebuilding all these. I don't think there is a lack of money, and there is maybe some lack of resources in the build-up. Also to say that the enormity is so big. I mean, there's so many things that have to be done. I'm talking about railway, roads, houses, businesses, all sorts of things, you know, public buildings, schools, everything had to be rebuilt. And after a year... Not all of it has been achieved. I was listening on the radio of people, some people who have managed to recover the houses just a few weeks ago, and that was we're talking a year now. So the distress that these people have gone through is enormous. You know, it's difficult to be able to put yourself into a situation like that because it's impossible. Then you have the loss of life, and no one. Could that loss of life been prevented if the alarms and the advice to the population had been more efficient? The consensus out there is that yes, that loss of life could have been prevented. Difficult to say after the event, you know.
Carlos Marathon is the head of
The head of the community, yeah. Should have gone. That is, I think it's 86% of the population in recent polls have, you know, they've all agreed that the guy shouldn't be there. The guy during that fatal day, apparently there is a gap where nobody knows where he was.
Well, he keeps changing his story as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, but first he said he was there at one time, then he happened, you know, there was evidence that he wasn't there, then his phone was blocked for a couple of hours. He said he was in a meeting with a journalist that happens to be a very good-looking girl. I'm not saying anything there, but that's what it is. But, you know, for 2 hours he disappeared. The messages to the population went out very late, and it wasn't the right message anyway, because the message only said, don't, you know, stop, you know, don't drive if you don't need to, or blah blah, instead of saying to the people, go upwards to higher levels of your property, because the, you know, the ground levels are going to be flooded. That kind of message didn't go out. People were caught trying to rescue things like cars in car parks and underground parking spaces and so on. So they were caught completely unprepared. And the advice was poor and was late. And there has to be a political responsibility for that action. The rebuilding of the area, it's another thing. It's very, very big. But I think there is funds allocated from the regional government and funds allocated from central government. Up to today, not all of the funds have been used. And there's people still waiting. There's a long list of people waiting for things to be done.
Yeah.
So the rebuilding hasn't been efficient either. So that someone has to take responsibility. I mean, people should have enough. The morality of it. People say, look, I can't do this. I'm not good enough. I'll step down and let someone else do it. And they're not doing that. The president of the regional community, I mean, someone asked me the other day, but how come this guy hasn't gone? I said, probably this guy's got nowhere to go, because his name has been tainted. He's not going to be able to go anywhere. He's just holding on for as long as he can to see if by rebuilding all the damage, people will forget and might be re-elected again. But that's not going to be the case. He should have gone by now. People don't want him there. It's not, well, it's just going to be a funeral, and he's not even going to be welcome at the funeral. The families have lost people are obviously seething. Mm-hmm. The amount of upset that is caused is enormous, and he doesn't have the morality of saying, you know, I'm stepping down. Also to say that the leader of the party, which is Feijóo, the leader of the Conservative Party, is a Conservative regional government there. He should have been the one to say, look, pal, time to go, you know. I mean, this is unsustainable.
Yeah,
that hasn't happened. So there is an element of anger out there. It's understandable because they weren't advised. The advice was incorrect. It was late. It was a total mess. True is to say, there was a freaky event, a nature event. But even so, things could have been done, and lives could have been saved, and damage could have been prevented.
This lunch he was having with this female journalist, and apparently he offered the job. He claims that as for is it Al Punto? Is it a newspaper? Is it a TV station? Al Punto.
What he was offering her was to run the regional TV.
Yeah.
I don't know where she works now, whether it's a newspaper or a TV station.
Yeah.
But basically, is a journalist. I mean, it's quite legitimate to have a meeting with someone about a matter of, you know.
I mean, he said he that one's, you know, and then it's from 5 until 6:45, which is the timing.
Yeah. The thing is, a day
80 people died in that time. That's one of the things that El País is saying today.
A day like that one, that from 2 o'clock in the afternoon, there was already reports that things were getting really bad.
Yeah.
The day before, the advice was that they were going to have torrential rains anyway. The judgment of going for lunch at 3 o'clock. With some journalists in a restaurant in the back room of the restaurant, if you like, the VIP room of the restaurant.
Yeah.
And then be uncontactable till about 7:30. It looks bad. It is bad. And it's unacceptable. The guy should have cancelled the lunch and said, look, it's not the time for this matter today. I should be in my office coordinating what's happening out there, especially knowing that from 2 o'clock, before he started the lunch, things were getting really bad. And for him to appear in the coordination centre at 8:30, that is too long a gap to someone of responsibility not to be there, saying, look, someone should have, at that point, I mean, at that coordination center, someone should have said, we need to tell the population to not get out of the houses and, if possible, go as high as possible. If they're in a block of apartments, those in the first floor, or ground floor and first floor, even second floor, they should go up to save their lives, you know. And that advice didn't go out. People didn't know what was going on. I mean, people were still trying to save their cars. That is the lack of knowledge of what was happening. Crazy to think now that you see the images to say, how on earth would you think of saving your car? But of course, people didn't know. So if you see your garage is being flooded, you think, oh my God, I have to go to work tomorrow. I'm going to have to move the car. Otherwise, I won't be able to go to work tomorrow. And they go to the garage and they get, you know, they drowned because the water was coming at such a speed and such force that they weren't able to get out. So that there is a lot of things that went wrong that day, and a lot of things have gone wrong since that day in terms of reconstruction of the area and everything else. And the thing is a total mess. However, there's some success stories. I was here on the radio. Someone who said, look, you know, my apartment, you know, 92-year-old woman whose apartment had been refurbished, and she was happy because everything was, you know, back to normal for her after months of waiting. So slowly, slowly, the area is recovering, but still no one has paid for it.
50,000 people turned out at the weekend for a demonstration against...
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. And I would have gone to... I hate demonstrations anyway, but, you know, I would have gone to protest against that. It was very, very badly managed. On the other hand, if you want to sort of have a line of defence for... Okay, I mean, no one could predict the enormity of the disaster. It was one of these freak natural events that you don't get... and you don't prepare for. You can prepare for certain things, but not for something like that. It was crazy. But it's still, you know, the political argument still there in the media and out there, and people are still angry. So, and I think they will still be angry for a long, long time. That's not the kind of event that you forget in a hurry.
Yeah, I mean, there's still an investigation undergoing this, and the investigating judge could...
Well, no, there's no investigation. It's a trial in place at the moment, and they are calling witnesses to see exactly what they did, when they did it, and so on, to get a timeline of the events and see if there's any judicial penalties to pay for it.
Yeah.
What will come from the trial, we don't know yet because it's in progress.
Yeah.
As you know, in Spain, progress means a long time. There could be some severe sentences passed if negligence is proven.
I mean, I remember there were the Dos Trajes back in 2006, which was the previous Valencia community.
Yeah, but funnily enough... this case is quite interesting because...
Los Trajes.
The guy Los Trajes, yeah. The suits.
Yeah. Yeah.
This guy was accused...
A bit of background.
This was, again, a regional conservative president who was accused of misusing public funds and so on, and he was taking bribes and everything else. So he was kicked out, and there was a court case, and he was accused of 12 different crimes, and he had 12 different court cases. We're talking from 2007, something like that, until very, very recently. I think it was last year.
This is when Valencia had the America's Cup. It had the Grand Prix of Europe.
Correct,
there.
Yeah.
They were redoing
What happened to this guy is after 12 trials, he was acquitted on every single one of them. He was acquitted of all of them. Nobody's come out in the press to apologise to this guy for all the things that they said at the time. Of course, we only have the judgments to judge him. I mean, a lot of people said, oh, he was corrupt anyway. Well, but the court didn't say that. He was acquitted from every single crime that was accused of. This guy wants to do a comeback now in the region, and he is making a case for being the guy who replaces this
Mathon.
You know, Mathon, which is the current one that everyone wants out. So whether that's a good idea tactically, but he's got all the legitimacy to be able to do it because he was acquitted of all the trials.
I can see the "suits you, sir" memes going around the place if he comes back after the two, you know, "ooh, suits you, sir," after the two trips. Just when you thought it was safe to go back to the haberdashery department, yeah. You know. But here's the thing, okay? Here's the thing, because you say, oh, you know, he's acquitted on 12 counts of whatever, corruption. But when you... when you look on the grand scheme of things, and I'm just thinking about, as well, Junta de Andalucía, Chavez. Was it Chavez? Who?
The Junta de Andalucía president.
And the guy who followed.
And his predecessor.
Yeah, yes. His successor. And just the you know, the huge amount of corruption that went in there, taking EU money that was destined, supposed to be for companies that were failing, and setting up fake companies that they could cream in EU money, etc. And the thing is, you see this with the alcaldes. I mean, not as bad as it used to be, but you know, in the noughties and whatever. As we sit only, you know, and we sit in the People's Republic of not Minerva but Estepona, and we know the trials and tribulations that some of those counties have gone through. Hence the joke: why does Alarín have more mayors than any other town in Spain? Because they're all in the prison at Alarín de la Torre. But yeah. There's a sort of shrug and a sort of world weary. Oh well, that's just what mayors do. Well, that's just what politicians do. And you could say it's Spain, but you could say it's around the world, couldn't you? Because people are going, oh, well, they're only self-serving. They're against themselves.
I'm sure that happens everywhere. I mean, the thing is that there is this concept that public money doesn't belong to anyone. It's just free money.
Right.
And that is the wrong idea of it. We all own that money. We all contribute towards that money. And that money should be very carefully attended to,
yeah,
and that's something that politicians don't understand. You know, they think that it's free money, so they can dispose of it because it's there. You know, it's not. This is you know, people contribute to that and should be very carefully managed. And the successful politicians who carefully manage that money are the ones who you know, stay. For a long time. I just wanted to give an example, a local example of someone who's managing the money very well and is very successful. And why not say it? Because we only hear of, you know, of bad mayors. But I mean, you got the one in Estepona.
Why did I know you're going to say
the guy is getting 70% of the vote because he's doing well, you know. So, but he looks after the public's money well, and that's what we don't do. So when it comes to public money, it seems to me that they treat it as it's nobody's money. It's, you know,
well, it's my favourite chauffeur in the hands of the hunter.
So
remember the chauffeur, don't you?
It's very tempting.
Yes,
right. It's very tempting, and here there's a number of guilty parties. Very tempting to say, look, there is this infrastructure that needs doing. To give you an example, and it costs 100 million. You know. You can, you know, there is two or three tenders for that particular infrastructure, a section of the road or whatever. It costs 100 million, you know. Mm-hmm. It's very easy for the company, also guilty of bribing the politician, to say, look, if you we put 102 million and 2 million for you and 100 for the infrastructure. That is very tempting for everyone. You can understand that, we're humans. There should be a way of controlling, number one, that doesn't happen, and secondly, that the one who makes the offer of bribery also gets punished. Because it seems to me that the big companies who are bribing politicians, whether it's central government or local government, it doesn't matter, they all seem to be getting one contract after the other, knowingly that were the ones that were bribing in the first place, For previous contracts, you know, so the company should be punished as well to say you can't just go offering money to politicians and then find that, you know, the following year the same tender gets won by the same company that bribed before. So, you know, there should be, we've had enough corruption cases that we had to deal with to, you know, for someone to think a system that is watertight and the public's money is not, you know, misused. And that is, you know, something that we haven't been able to do. Not in Spain, and I don't think anywhere, because, you know, corruption cases keep popping up everywhere.
We'll be back with more Viewpoint after this.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo. We're going through a variety of subjects today. If you want to get involved...
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
To the lines we go. Morning, call you live on... welcome, I can say, to who's calling, but welcome back. Welcome back to the show, Alf.
Hiya.
Hello.
It's a question to Andreas.
There we go.
I was interested in what you were saying about... Listen, all around the world, there's always accusations of corruption at whatever level, especially with local authorities, mayors, things like that. There's always there. And it's about how do you put in checks and balances. There is a system in the UK, I was wondering whether you had similar in Spain, and that's the use of people called ombudsmen. So we have an ombudsman for local planning. You can go, you've got a complaint about the local council and you're not getting anywhere with the local council, obviously you go through your MP, you go through all that, you know, all the internal stuff, and then at the end of the day you complain to an ombudsman. And an ombudsman is like an individual, almost like a judge, but they will look into the issue and they will try to find a way through it or make a decision who's right and who's wrong. Do you not have that sort of thing in Spain, so that anybody complaining about, say, money misspent on housing, like you were saying about, oh, they bung somebody £1 million to get a contract for a building. I'm not saying it doesn't happen in the UK, but it wouldn't be as blatant as that. And if it was, it would be found out. And if the authorities did nothing about it, an individual, any individual, me, I could write to the ombudsman and say, I would like you to investigate this.
The answer, it's not an ombudsman as that you've got in the UK, which is an independent body that sort of arbitrates between parties. We have different things, you know, where you can complain about things that you see, and then there is the figure of the people's advocate. That would be the easiest translation. I'll say it in Spanish, so for you...
But that's like the judge, just like going to a judge.
No, it's not
it?
A judge. It's called the Defensor del Pueblo. That is like the people's advocate, you know, so you can go there and he will look into a complaint. And make it. The only thing is that, of course, they're not enforceable. They're just recommendations.
It's an enforceable action. And it's enforceable, you know, if you don't do it, they'll call the police in.
Yeah, but, I mean, there are bodies like that. But, I mean, traditionally...
Just takes a long time.
Traditionally, they have been managing to commit the crime, get caught, and then go through the court system. As we just said a minute ago, I said to Giles, I mean, the court system is particularly slow. And then, you know,
it just gets
watered down. And then some... Well, not necessarily. If you're guilty, you get the sentence and you have to pay for it. But it doesn't seem the punishment fits the crime, because I think the crime is quite serious and the punishment is quite light.
Well, also the distinct difference in the judicial system and going down that avenue is that in the UK, when you go, whether it's to a court, I used to deal with industrial tribunals. In an industrial tribunal, you just get a book out,
yeah,
and you look at an issue that's similar to the one you want, and you quote that to a tribunal, and then they make a decision as to whether you're right or wrong, or how much you're to blame.
Got some more calls coming in. Sorry, I have to cut you.
Do they not have the same in Spain for that? The judges all seem to take...
You're looking at kind of jurisprudence, aren't you?
It seems the judges have individual, they make individual decisions.
Yeah.
Collective.
Can I just get some more calls coming in, if it's okay with you? Thanks very much.
Just a question, really.
Thanks very much indeed. Morning, caller. Thanks for holding. You're on live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. Peter.
Morning, Peter.
Good morning. All right. Andreas, there's a perfectly good system that has been trialled to stop this corruption and make people accountable and responsible for the corruption and where the money goes. But you are vehemently against it, very, very much against it. But I think it's a perfect system. It's called the Department of, DOGE. Department of Government Efficiency. You didn't seem to like that one, though, did you?
Sorry, sir, I missed all that. Maybe it's...
This could go back to is this accountability for the, in Valencia?
No, right. In the United States of America, headed up by Elon Musk.
Is he still doing that, Peter, or did Trump give him the keys to the door for that one?
I'm not sure. He did knock it on the head, but he'd set up the department. But I do believe he's got some sort of input on it. But you could not get a more perfect way of making people responsible for the efficiency of the government or where the money's going. Yet the problems we have with many of your guest presenters and that on this radio station is the fact that they cannot see past the blindness of the Trump hatred. Yeah. So nothing makes sense to them, does it?
I'm a great advocate of measuring the efficiency and the productivity of civil servants across the board.
What he was doing.
Sorry?
That's exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't against that, and there was a couple of ministers have tried to introduce in Spain a measure of productivity in civil servants, failed miserably because that would take a lot of votes.
I'll quote you, Andreas, when you said, "What sort of person?" Ask people to email in and what was it? Because he was asking them to
just to give some context. This is Musk again.
And Musk wanted them to justify their jobs.
Yeah.
And I remember you at the time said that was ridiculous and what CEO would do that of a company. Well, every time you click onto the internet and you want to go onto a certain site, it's called Capture, I believe, and I asked to see if you are a human being. Now, when I first come down to Spain, everyone was getting their mortgages before 2007 crash. They used to call them pulse and passport mortgages because everybody was conning everybody. And then that's why. But when Musk came in, and what you don't seem to realise is what was going on under the Democratic Party since Obama, the amount of corruption was unprecedented.
Okay.
The amount of money, we're talking trillions, not billions, trillions. And this money was going all out left, right and centre, and it's coming back to the Democratic Party under some sort of disguise. It was going to some government non-government organisation, and then it was coming back. And the reason he asked people to confirm who they were was because many of the people didn't actually exist in these jobs.
Right.
Millions and millions of people didn't actually exist. And it's the same in Spain. Years ago, many people, we used to believe that Spain had a good record of people reaching 80s and 90s and 100s. And it wasn't until they found out that most of them still claiming their grandparents' pensions. Now, we have Elon Musk is not stupid. The department he set up, when all you lot were saying, these spotty young nerds, they've set up a system now where every penny will be accountable for. Now, forget all your personalities, as I keep saying. In politics, what would you, if someone ran and said, what I'm going to do when I come into power, I'm going to make every government department accountable for every penny they spend. I am going to clean up crime in the major crime cities. Right. I'm going to get rid of the gangs and the wars and the drugs. I am then going to go after everyone and anyone who's corrupt. I'm going to make sure they don't abuse their power. Because this is what's coming with AI. Because AI, if AI takes over the law, you don't need a judge.
It's down to the law.
Peter, my friend. Yes. You worked in the nightclub industry for years and years and years. You ran a security company, didn't you? I remember you talking about this. You know exactly what you talk of. And you've worked, and as you said, you know Las Vegas like the back of your hand. I remember you saying that as well.
Yep.
Just one of the things, because this whole thing about blowing up boats coming over from Colombia and Venezuela, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. Yeah.
Reagan tried doing this in the 80s, didn't he? Oliver Stone got his liberal knickers in a twist about this one, because we were going to have the next Vietnam in Nicaragua or El Salvador. You remember that, because we're sort of the same age. You remember the whole thing.
Yep.
But you know, because you've worked in the industry, so you've had to shake the little so-and-sos down, that there's no supply without demand. And so surely, you know, if they're going to start to do a war on drugs, which nobody's ever won, not even the Brits in Afghanistan against the poppies, for goodness sake, in the whatever century, you've got to stop those whinging liberal, white class, middle class so-and-sos, having a cheeky gram at the weekend.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, first of all, Giles, as far as me personally, going back to those days, do you remember the film about the Essex Boys, the March of the was it Foot Soldiers?
I know them very well, in fact. Well,
so do I, and I know many, many people. That wasn't just exclusive to that area.
Yeah.
There was hundreds of us doing exactly the same in our own areas, me included, right? We took control of what came in and what came out. And rather than a war in your club or in your boss's club or your owner's club, you take control of it and you allow exclusivity, you get a backhander, and you make sure, because you, like you just said, you can't control, you can put as many signs up as you like. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But secondly, you're singing from the wrong hymn sheet on what you think Trump's doing. Again, as I pointed out, see, the thing is with Andreas, when I pointed out, do you remember when I said about Philip Miller and what he's trying to do, Trump's trying to do with the economy? And you Googled Stephen Miller, and you Googled him. And I said he would take the dollar down and what he was trying to do. All that is still out there. Yeah. And that's what they're trying to do. Yeah, all Andreas says is he doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't listen to anybody. Oh, he throws his toys out the pram instead of looking at the bigger picture. And it's exactly the same. I'm glad you brought up Venezuela and because the what's her name? Maria Corina Machado, is it? Machado? She has just been given the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
Everybody was popping herself and thought Trump was going to get it. The first statement she made was, thank you to Donald Trump. I am going to dedicate this to him, because without him, I would not have been able to do this.
Fair enough.
I don't know. Hang on a sec. Yeah, I don't know if you know.
Calls coming in, mate. That's all.
I don't know if you know your number, because I want to get this out there.
Go for it.
The fifth president of the United States of America, James Monroe. Do you know the Monroe? Is it the Monroe Accordance?
You've got me on this one, Peter. But go and explain.
Yeah. Well, that was about the hemispheres: north, south, east, west hemispheres. He signed that in 100 years ago to say that the Europeans could not keep raping the South Americans and putting their influence over there. So he signed the accord, signed the agreement, and said that America controls the Western Hemisphere. Anyone else outside of that can do what they want. Stop these wars forever and don't encroach and don't take, because if you do, we're coming after you. Now he's writing 2.0, because Venezuela are in hands with hand in hand with Iran and Russia. And just off of Venezuela is Margarita Island, where they train Hamas.
Okay.
So that's the reason he's doing it. The drugs is just a front. And also he's trying to shake up Mexico and tell them this comes your way if you keep going. So it's all about controlling the Western Hemisphere.
Damn, that's mucked up my plan, because my grand plan was to get away from all this madness and go and live in South America. But there you go, Peter. You've completely rocked.
Yeah, but if you go,
and I was thinking Margarita.
South America.
Yeah,
they got Costa Coffees there as well.
That's heresy, as far as I'm concerned. And I thought Margarita Island sounded rather attractive, obviously, but not if it's a Hamas hotbed. But there you
Margarita
go,
Margarita Island. Hamas training ground.
Peter, thank you for your calling. Good to hear from you again for a while. Quick break, and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Yes, indeedy. Hello.
Some breaking news. Is that coming in from... Sorry about this, ladies and gentlemen, but Richard just sent me something through. I just want to check this is correct. In the meantime, last October, Musk pledged to cut at least $2 trillion from the federal government. Morning, Richard. He subsequently halved his target on the 10th of April, talked about making savings of $150 billion from cutting fraud and waste by the end of next financial year. $2 billion to $150 billion is 93%. Why is that if there's so much wastage? Looking at these bits and pieces coming in this morning, just want to see something, because Peter just sent me something. Just want to check on my news wires. That's not what I wanted to see either. Where's the news flash gone? Excuse me. We get a thing called I'm peeking behind the curtain. We have a thing called IRA, which is obviously what we look at. Blimey. Okay. Yes, you're right. 40 Towers actress Prunella Scales has passed away at the age of 93. She passed away at home, Basil, in London this morning after Basil with dementia. She's best known for her role as Sybil, the long-suffering wife of Basil Fawlty, played by John Cleese. We'd been told she'd be watching the show just a day before her death. Sorry, Richard, I am the news wire. Why check? Well, you know, because when I went to journalist college, you know, one of those where you pay 50p and then you get sucked in by the mainstream media, you got to get at least sort of three or four checks on it. Otherwise, I will be telling the world that it's run by a secret cable. The world is run by a secret cabal of 12-foot subterranean hamsters called Nigel, because you'll find a website that says that. But in the meantime, very sad news indeed.
This is sad news, actually. Because 40 Towers is one of those shows that is part of, certainly part of my life.
Yeah.
And
one of those shows you can't...
It's sad news.
I tell the truth always. Thank you very much. You are a paragon of virtue, Richard. And goodness, have you ever thought of standing for Reform UK? And in the meantime, you can't watch 40 Towers. Yeah, I tried to show it to the goddaughters who are Gen Z, and they were like, "This is appalling. We can't have this sort of stuff."
Personal thing that I've got with Fawlty Towers. I won't explain on the radio because that is going into my psychological.
You think you're the major? Do you think you're the major? I must have liked a 40.
That actor was in the
Café de Paris when it was bombed in 1941, and he was the only survivors. Café de Paris, which is, if you look, Piccadilly Circus, just up from there to up Regent Street, and it was underground. It was thought to be one of the most secure places to be, and the band was playing on, and a bomb went straight through the whole thing and landed. It was absolute carnage. So therefore, and one of the actors there, that actor was turned out to be the major.
Okay,
who's got one of the funniest lines that I can repeat on radio, because I must have liked this girl because I took her to see India, and he went to India, major. He said yes at the Oval. It's like no, it's the cricket. It's like anyway, 5 minutes to go. If you want to get your viewpoint across,
to contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
This came across my... Yes, thank you, Bella Berkeley. Thank you. That was the gentleman. Thank you so much. Bella Berkeley played the major. Now, this is an interesting one that came through because we've got 5 minutes left or so. 19% of Spaniards believe the Franco years were very good. And Jose Sacristian, am I pronouncing that correctly, gives a most resounding resort. I hear echoes that remind me of voices I thought were never going to be heard or spoken. This is the actor, Jose Sacristian, who won the Goya Award in 2022. And he has spoken forcefully about what Franco's meant regime in Spain. Because earlier this month, the Center for Sociological Research, a Spanish public body, found that 90% of Spaniards believe the years of Franco's dictatorship were, quote-unquote, very good.
I don't think those figures are right, actually. It was a poll, because I read this.
There was a poll
that kids from 18 to 24.
Right.
There was an unusual high percentage of them thought that the Franco years or life during the Franco regime was better than now. So that's what the poll said. And that was on the back of the growth of Vox in young people. So the intention of vote towards Vox and their perception that Franco years were better.
Yeah.
Of course they weren't. I was here during the Franco years. The thing is,
you can look back and...
But true is to say...
Yeah.
That there are, in the 40 years of Franco was in power, there were two parts to it. The first part, which is there was the after war, and there was an element of...
Large-scale executions.
Yeah, there was an element of persecution against the people you've been fighting for 3 years, and there was persecution of people, and they just, where all freedom stopped, and there was a lot of executions, people going to prison and everything else. People that were on the other side of the Civil War.
All of those things.
Landowners, but truth to say that from the mid-50s onwards, as soon as the country starting to become a little bit more wealthy...
And why was
people
that?
People relaxed a little bit more.
And why was that?
Why was that?
Yeah.
Because of Marshall Plan.
Because of Ike. Because of Eisenhower's visit to Madrid in 1954.
The Marshall Plan and the concessions that Franco did towards the military bases and the guarantee that the communism wouldn't advance through Spain. And there was, and they really helped him out and helped out the pumping money into Spain that then was trickled through to the everyday economy, and then people felt a little bit better off and they relaxed more, and then there wasn't so it didn't it was things weren't so political. It's a very good film.
Right.
I can't remember the name of it. But it's a very good film that explains a little bit that the process, and it's a guy that escapes the Franco troops during the war, and he hides in his house between the walls, and he spends 25 years hiding in the walls of his house, and he sees life through a hole that he's got in the wall of the house to see what's happening out there, how they come after him, they wanted to arrest him, and they just try and make his family's life hell and everything else. But at the end of the film, right in the 60s, the guy comes out of the wall and he opens the door of his house, and nobody takes any notice of him because people are, they have the little cars and washing machines and life, So.
And you know who's in charge of building the runways at Tarragona?
It's Tarragona, isn't it? The big base is Rota y Tarragona. That's the major American air base in the 50s.
You've got Torrejón in Madrid, which is an air base. Yeah. You've got Rota in Cádiz, which is a naval base.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is another air base in Zaragoza, further north. Yeah.
And who's in charge of that for financing and building all that? Otto Scornesi, and he was the most dangerous man in Europe. He was the guy who dressed up his German troops as Americans in the Battle of the Bulge. He managed to escape, got to Madrid, and lived out his life with contacts in Argentina. He used to have a place in central Madrid, and a big holiday home in Mallorca, and therefore the connection is. Yeah.
I didn't have the pleasure to follow these chat.
No, you didn't.
Thank you for the information.
That's Nazis in Spain, one of my specialist subjects. Andres, we're almost out of time. It's been a pleasure and a privilege this morning to have you with us. We've gone through the whole viewpoint. And also, I've really enjoyed this morning's show, shining a light on what's happening in Spain.
So, and let's keep celebrating for until Saturday. Bournemouth is second in the Premiership table.
It was all going so well. This programme will be reposted at 7 o'clock. Thanks for the calls in. Stephen Ritson's up next.
Views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production.
If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.